if you're all in for what you do and you do understand the connecting the dots, it is your job to master the ability to explain that to people and articulate it in a way that it pulls it out of them. Because the key is your ideal audience is going to have a very specific problem that you can solve powerfully.
Welcome to the Influence and Scale podcast, where content creators, marketers, and entrepreneurs learn how to increase their influence and scale their business using content marketing. My name is Tyler Basu, and alongside my business partner, Chuck Anderson, we'll be sharing proven strategies to help you grow your audience, create great content, and generate more traffic, leads, and sales for your business. Thanks so much for joining us. Now let's dive in. What's up? This is Tyler Basu here. Welcome to the podcast. And today I have the pleasure of introducing a very special guest. This is somebody that I met at an event in San Diego back in 2017, maybe 2018. And then we bumped into each other again at an event in San Diego, because all the cool events for online marketers seem to happen in San Diego. But we connected again in the fall of 2019, and we've actually ended up doing some work for his company and for some of his clients as well. So he's become a great source of referrals for us. So anyway, I wanted to bring him onto the podcast because he's got a very valuable skill set, the ability to sell and to influence and persuade. That even if you aren't personally having to jump on phone calls and convince people to buy stuff, if you've got that skill, it definitely helps when you're creating content or writing ads. And if you know how to sell, you can transfer that skill set into the content that you're putting online so that your content does a better job of selling for you. So his name is Jim Padilla, and his company is called Gain the Edge. They're an outsourced sales company. So for businesses that don't have their own in-house sales force, they can hire Jim's salespeople on an ongoing basis, or even to just support with a launch that's going to require a lot of phone calls in a specific window of time. He has a sales force of over 100 people that are essentially available for hire and can be plugged in to other people's businesses. So he's got a great business model, and they've seen some great growth over the last few years. And in our conversation together, we're gonna dive into that skill set of being able to sell, being able to influence, being able to persuade in an authentic way, not in a manipulative way or in a way that gets people to do something that's not in their best interest, but how to do it with integrity, how to help people make a buying decision. And we're also going to touch on his background a little bit, because he's got a pretty tumultuous backstory. And that's essentially where he picked up these skills, because for him it was a survival mechanism to be able to influence and persuade people that were in his environment. I'll let him, you know, dig into that story a bit more. But it's just interesting to see how the challenges that he had early in his life helped equip him with the skills that now play a big role in his success as an entrepreneur. So anyway, on that note, we're going to jump right in. This is Jim Padilla from Gain the Edge, and I hope you enjoy this interview. Well, Jim, thanks so much for taking the time to do the interview, man. I'm really excited to chat with you today.
Yeah, been looking forward to it, man. Ever since, you know, we connected at the New Media Summit, I've been enjoying watching what you're doing, and really excited about talking for your people and sharing some value.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that, and it was a pleasure to meet you down in San Diego as well. Let's jump right in. Take us back to why you became an entrepreneur in the first place. Like, what were you doing before you got into business? What made you decide to get into business?
Yeah, you know, it was one of those journeys that you take where you don't really know why everything is going the way it's going until you get to the end of it, and then you look back and go, "Oh, okay, this makes total sense now." But basically, from an employer perspective, you know, I mean, I went to college, got a degree in accounting, hated every minute of it, can't stand that environment. I was just really good with numbers, so everybody told me that's what I should do. And I went through literally dozens and dozens with massive plurals of jobs. I worked in every industry you can, tried everything, hated all of it. Most of it I didn't last. I mean, if I lasted 18 months at a job, that was a long time. Usually it was two or three jobs a year, mostly because I just couldn't fit into any box. And I used to get frustrated watching people do things in really inefficient, stupid ways. And I would always suggest new ways to do it. And you find out that people don't like that.
Right.
Especially from somebody who hasn't been there that long. So that just didn't work after a while. And I put myself in a bad situation because I grew up in a very tough environment. My mom had me at 16 and my father wasn't around and my mom had no idea what she was doing. So the only way she responded was with violence and rage and anger. And I got abused pretty heavily as a kid. I got hit with whatever was nearby, baseball bats, broomsticks, plates broken over my head. It was a lot. And when you're a little kid, you start think you don't know why. You just think you did something wrong. So I spent a lot of my waking moments trying to figure out how to master this environment. How do I make my mom feel not threatened? How do I make her feel safe enough to not want to hurt me? And so I started cultivating this skill set. And, fast forward the story, and I'm 13 years old. I was in foster care, pretty much on my own on the streets at 16, in jail at 19. And so pretty much the first 20 years of my life was spent in this environment where I literally spent every minute of every day mastering how do I keep these people over there in good graces? How do I keep them from wanting to hurt me? And it's something that it became a massive asset to me because you start learning how to influence your environments, how to win people over, how to make friends, how to find a positive reason to like somebody who you really shouldn't like, et cetera. And it just became into my DNA and I started attracting opportunities. And so everywhere I go, people are always offering me opportunities because they see something in me. And then, over time I've learned to just be able to really, to figure out how to put a system to it, how to process it, how to strategize it and turn it into revenue. And, when I first went into my first commission job was because, I made some serious mistakes when I was younger, as you can imagine. I had a child that I didn't see. And I had a ton of child support that the district attorney was levying on me. And basically, I was making $3,364 a month at my job. And I was getting garnished for half of it. And I just wanted to keep the $3,300. So I needed to figure out how to double my money. And I found an opportunity with a guy who was selling alarms. And he's like, yeah, earn what you're worth. I'm like, I don't need to earn what I'm worth. I just need to earn $6,600 a month. Can I get that? He's like, dude, you can make 10, 20, 30. I'm like, dude, I just need $6,600 a month. So the district attorney can take half and I can live on 33. So after we did this dance for a week, he said, dude, just come down here, Jim. So I go in, we go out door knocking, and I was terrified. I was like, what the hell is this? I'm like, I'm a college educated professional and I'm door knocking on people's front doors to make money. I felt like a beggar. And until I watched all of these guys who were my age or younger coming in making hundreds of dollars every night because they got people to buy alarms. And I was like, okay, there's something to this. And then pretty soon I started closing sales. And then I realized I can only knock on so many doors. So I recruited door knockers so that I could just go do the living room pitches and make more sales. Then I realized I needed more guys to knock on doors and I needed to replicate me. Pretty soon I had a van full of people and I had a team. And my own team was bigger than the rest of the office. And I was out producing the office. So I decided, how do I become a franchise? And I went and got my own ADT security dealership. Opened up three offices in three cities with a telemarketing office back when you used to actually pay for phone service. So we had massive phone bills. And an entrepreneur was born. I started realizing that this is the way to go. I get to control my income. And I really didn't care how much the district attorney took because I could just go make more, And the same thing happened to me when I was, I spent time in credit collections. It was a torturous environment, but it was massive learning skills because I just was not wired to beat people up. And the guys who made the most money there beat the hell out of people. And it was right. So I was broke because I bought everybody's sob story. And but I learned the power and the importance of helping people. I really learned the power and importance of what tension can do in a conversation, mm-hmm. but I've learned the ability to be able to help people experience their own tension as opposed to me beating them up with tension, which is a very different experience. And same thing happened as I kept moving through space. While I was in my alarm company, we sold an alarm, a CCTV deal. to a mortgage broker shop. And this guy, actually, he was a car dealership. He's a used car dealership. This is the craziest thing. So we go in. He was supposed to collect a check. My installer was out there. He's supposed to collect a check for $2,500 when he gets out there. And the guy, of course, he's a car dealership, used car dealer. So he's wheeling and dealing and trying not to give him the check. So I go out there. We start having this conversation. Pretty soon, he's like, dude, I really like you and I love what you're doing. I'm telling him my whole story and how this alarm company birthed and all this. And he's like, hey, I have a broker license. I just have no time to run a company. You know how to sell and pull people in here. Why don't we partner this? We can put a bunch of mortgage people here and we'll split the deal. And I'm like, why not, man? So this was on a Friday. On Monday, we had 35 loan officers in his office, and I'm running a bunch of broker agents. And I had a finance degree, so I knew numbers. I just wasn't licensed. I was just running a bunch of people. And we had no idea what we were doing. We were self-taught, and I was, you know, went and got my license after the fact. But it was the most crazy way to birth a mortgage company. And, you know, and it became this multi-million dollar shop running people. And again, it was just the thing that has happened to me in all of my entrepreneurial ventures is my ability to influence people, my ability to connect with people and help them see possibility and opportunity is what has opened the door to all of my entrepreneur ventures. Not one of them did I go out in search of. They all found me.
Yeah, crazy. Now that's an incredible story, and I remember you told me, you told me briefly about your background when we met in San Diego, and that was, I knew right away I wanted to get you on the podcast because the turnaround, like the direction that you potentially could have gone down, and then you did a complete 180, and starting with that commission sales job, it's just a really incredible story. Can you help us? Can you bridge the gap for us though? Take us from that point of that point in your journey to that partnership to what you're doing today. Like, tell us about how Gain the Edge started and the business that you're running today. Just give us an overview of what you're focused on.
Yeah, you know, basically what happened is I was in mortgage, I rode the wave. We were in the business of making money, not really in the business of helping people. And when the bubble hit in 2008, I was a victim of it because we didn't build business the right way. We were just taking advantage of people, wheeling, dealing, and making money. And so I knew how to sell. I just didn't know how to really help people. And I met a friend at a gas station in the June of 2008. And basically, I had done a loan for her mother, who was a 72-year-old woman. We put her in a loan that she had no business being in. And when the housing bubble popped, she got screwed. And I saw her at the gas station and she said, hey, she's like, she walked across the station, walked up to me. Her daughter did. She said, you're a crook. She's like, you're the devil and you deserve whatever comes your way. And I wanted her to hit me because I felt so horrible because she was right. I knew everything she said was true. And I had nothing to say. I was hoping like a car would run me over or something. She said, my mother's living in that car behind me over there because of you. And I realized right at that moment that I have a massive skill set and everything came rushing back to me. Like, how do I take this ability that I earned, that I gained to be able to influence people's environment, influence the way they think and what they do so that they can make decisions in their own best interest instead of in my own best interest? And right that day, my sales process was born. And I basically went through and stripped out everything in the sales conversation and in the sales process that I didn't like or that didn't serve somebody and left only the things that felt good. And that's what I built my sales strategies from. So I started teaching people how to sell by mastering their environment and helping people feel safe enough to trust them to want to buy from them. And then I reached a place where some people were like, hey, you know, we come across some high-level coaches who, instead of bringing us in to train their team, they're like, look, I don't want you to train my team. Why don't you just do our sales? We got a big launch coming up, and we just have a bunch of sales that need to be handled, and how about you do it with your team? So I was like, sure. And I had never done it. I'd never done it like that. So we do this big, you know, $1.6 million launch. I grabbed a dozen people who used to be my clients or friends or whatever, and we went – crazy. It was a train wreck of a launch. Everybody won. They made a $1.6 million. It was fantastic. And a niche was born. All of a sudden, my phone was ringing left and right with people who were wanting to hire our team to do sales for their launches and their back of the room sales for their live events. And here we are 4 years and multi-million dollars later, just on this crazy ride. That's just been an amazing blessing. And again, an opportunity that found me.
This is super cool. And how big is the sales force that you have now that's available for hire?
We have about 120 people on our team, and it's all virtual, and we're in 5 countries. Yeah, so it's pretty cool.
So these guys, they get on the phone, and for any one of your clients that needs a salesperson, can this be for an ongoing basis, or is it generally for a defined amount of time, like for a launch, let's say?
It has to be the right fit. We have some customers, some clients that we work with ongoing because we've really figured out the right connection to go. But the majority of our clients are seasonal. They come to us. We do a couple of launches a year with them, do a couple of events, and then we don't hear from them for a few months.
Okay, cool. Got it. I want to dive into this topic of sales. And you and I have so much in common. We both come from door-to-door sales. I was knocking on doors from 20 to 21. And I learned, you know, the hard sell approach of here's how you use fear of loss and urgency. And, you know, I would hit 100 doors a day and expect mostly rejection to just get one or two deals out of like 100 doors, right? So I learned this really fast-paced kind of way of selling, which even though it worked to some extent, it didn't feel right all the time. I wasn't super, you know, like yourself. I didn't like selling in a way that was pushy or salesy, if that makes sense. And I think a lot of people feel the same way. There's definitely a stigma on that end of the spectrum where salespeople are pushy at the expense of helping people. Like they'll sell anything to anyone, regardless of if it's good for them or not. And I think that's the kind of selling that people don't like. And then on the other end of the spectrum, we've got people who genuinely want to help others, but don't have good sales skills. So nothing ever gets sold. They're out there helping and giving and giving and giving, but they're not profiting from that because they're missing that component. And you've kind of brought those two worlds together where your sales approach and the way that you've trained the sales force that you have is they're genuinely helping people. They're not pushing them to do something that's not in their best interest, and the sale is still happening. So can you speak to just kind of that hybrid approach? Like what is the philosophy that's been baked into this approach that all these people have been trained?
Yeah, great question. And it comes down to really getting people to love the sales process. Now, 95% of people you talk to who do any kind of sales do it because they have to, not because they love to. And our team is comprised of people who absolutely love sales. And you have to be totally in touch with the opportunity that's in front of you. And I don't care what you're selling. I was just at an event last week where somebody was trying to minimize the importance of selling paperclips. They say, well, if you have paperclips to sell, that's different because there's no real purpose in that. And I say, well, not to the guy who makes the paperclips. That's a false statement. You know, there's purpose in everything. You just got to find the way to connect the dots to the reality and the relevance. And if you're all in for what you do and you do understand the connecting the dots, it is your job to master the ability to explain that to people and articulate it in a way that it pulls it out of them. Because the key is your ideal audience is going to have a very specific problem that you can solve powerfully. Most of the time, they don't know. Here's the problem for most people. Most people are horrible at self-diagnosis of any kind, right? You go into the doctor and say, oh, my knee hurts. He's like, yeah, that's because something in your shoulder is pulling over here and it's all connected. And you're like, what the hell? How did that happen? Right? But if you go in and he's trying to fix your knee, it never would have solved the problem because the real problem was in your shoulder and your back or something, right? We have the same problem in business. We misdiagnose all the time. You combine that with the fact that most people don't know how to communicate effectively. So they don't know how to articulate the problem that they're misdiagnosing. Mm-hmm. And now you're having a conversation about something that doesn't even matter. So the key here is you have to be able to learn how to speak to the pain, the struggle, and the possible outcome, the mountaintop experience, as I call it. What's the mountaintop experience of you working with me and everything working right? If I can articulate that better than you can, you also give me credit for being able to solve your problem. So now we have implied credibility here. And now we can just have a conversation about what is. Instead of me trying to prove something mm-hmm. or trying to shame you because you don't have a problem with it, now we're just working together to solve a problem. And that's fun. If you're not, if you don't like doing that, you shouldn't be an entrepreneur. So that's what we're here for, right? So the whole key in this is getting crystal clear to the opportunity that's presented in front of you. It's not about learning a bunch of tactics and strategies and say this when they say that. And, you know, I actually have a podcast called Sales Unscripted because my key, the number one byline inside the walls of our company is that what you're saying is nowhere near as important as who you're being while you're saying it. It's all about who you're being. You could say all the right things 100 different ways. If you're not coming from the right place, it's useless, right? So you have to have the right intentions coming into this. And then the whole goal here is just getting really connected to the fact that every time you get on the phone with somebody, if I know that I have a potential to change your life, change the trajectory of your business, potentially change your family tree, I owe it to you and to me to be fully prepared for that opportunity and to be the one, if it means that if there's 100% of energetic connection that has to happen here, if it means that I have to carry 95% of it because you're just confused and you don't know what up, then that's my job. Right. So we have to show up in that way. There's too many things out there that we buy into as a professional, like the whole get them to say yes three times, all that nonsense. That's bull crap. I give people willing permission to say no as many times as they need to.
Right. Right.
Right.
Well, and I think the more that I used the sales tactics that I was trained, and this is back in when I was doing door to door, and even when I got into selling real estate, the more that I behaved like a salesperson, the more people's guards went up. Like the more tactics that I started to use and techniques that I learned about trying, like 90% of the time it brought somebody's guard up because they could see that from a mile away. Like they knew what I was doing. I mean, this stuff is, you know when you're being sold. There's an energy there that's much different from really and truly diagnosing somebody's problem and working together to find a solution, as you put it.
For sure. And, you know, it's interesting because Chris Voss, who's an FBI hostage negotiator, former, and he's one of the most brilliant negotiators on the planet that I've ever come across. And he talks about how our brain is, you know, we all know that it's wired from, you know, the days of caveman times, and we used to have to hunt and gather food, and we sense fear in the saber-toothed tiger and all that. Well, today's saber-toothed tiger is someone who's going to attack my safety, my legacy, my family, my finances. And so a salesman represents that saber-toothed tiger. So what happens is our whole system goes into protect mode and fear mode. All the kind of things that when the cortisol gets running, right, our fingernails literally stop growing, right? All of our resources go into protection mode, which means we're no longer able to think. So if 70% of our brain is running around flipping out crazy because it's trying to find the exit, and you're trying to have a conversation with somebody who's at max working with 30% of their brain capacity, do you think they can make a great decision in that moment? They can't. So, you know, we should not be in the position of selling them anything at that moment. You should be in the position of helping them feel really clear and confident about the opportunity in front of them. Once they get there, now you can have a dialogue and you no longer need a bunch of tactics and strategies. You just need to show up as their trusted advisor and the ally. And everything changes.
That's great advice. Now, Jim, I wanted to dive into dealing with rejection. Hearing no's or even when we diagnose and maybe it's not the right fit, like how as a salesperson or as an entrepreneur, we should be handling that. And part of the equation has to do with, you know, how you got that sales appointment or that call in the first place. So if we could speak to like the relationship between marketing and sales and how that affects the likelihood of us facing rejection. Because I remember, you know, if knocking on doors, there was no marketing happening. Like I was plopped into a neighborhood. These people didn't know I was coming. They were not qualified. And the only thing that qualified them as a prospect was the fact that they answered the door. That was it.
Right.
Right. So just because of that, the game, it was a numbers game. I was prepared for like 95% rejection. But with this approach, we got to make sure that we increase the odds that we're talking to the right person, right? So can you just speak to the process of perhaps qualifying somebody before we get on the call, or making sure that we're on the phone with the right kind of people. Like, what's happening before this call actually takes place, to increase the odds that we are speaking to the right person, and just so that it's not a numbers game where we're literally eating rejection all day long.
Yeah, this is a conversation that I wish more people were having, actually. And we work on the back end of hundreds of different webinars and funnels, so we see this all the time. There is a disconnect sometimes if you're marketing one thing, and then when they get in the conversation with you, you're taking them a different direction. And, you know, David Nagel famously says that when you get to a place of your offer, nothing should be a surprise. The offer should be a logical conclusion to a well-delivered presentation. Now, to me, the part that people miss is that conversation begins at hello. And if a hello was you talking on stage, it starts there. If hello was you at a networking event, then it stops there. If it was you at a Facebook ad, the sales conversation begins that moment. So you first need to be crystal clear about what is the problem that you solve for these people, and speaking to it in a way that they understand and buy into the fact that they have that problem. So this is actually used to teach a sales system around this called the three keys. And the first key of this is that the person you're speaking to must be clear that they've got a problem. And you would think that's pretty fundamental, but most people don't realize that that's not who you're marketing to, right? We're marketing to people who we hope have a problem, and we know they have a problem, but they probably don't. And again, they've misdiagnosed. So how do you speak to them in that marketing and in every piece of the messaging once they opt into your sequence, right? So they first must understand that they've got a problem. Second is they must be crystal clear that there is a direct consequence to them of not solving the problem, right? Just because you have a problem does not mean you're clear, right? If you're overweight, you know, I struggled with trying to lose weight, but then I'd be up in the fridge eating ice cream at midnight. Well, clearly I wasn't connected to the consequence of not solving my problem, even though I was aware that I had a problem, right? So get crystal clear connection, and you have to be reminding them of that. You have to be speaking to that and drawing that out along the way. And then the third part is understanding clearly that you are the solution, not your industry, not your company, because there's other people at your company who can probably sell what you do, right? It's you. So you have to position yourself and connect those dots. And so when you're talking to those people, every point along the way, this is a funnel, as we all understand. A funnel has the smallest tip at the delivery point, which means every step along the way, you should be eliminating people. Okay. It's not about engaging people. It's not about engaging the perfect person and bringing them all the way through. It's about engaging people who could be the perfect person and then eliminating them along the way. So by the time you get there, you have something for the right person. But then the real important part is if they were close enough to get into the funnel, you now want to make sure that they're sent away with parting gifts and prizes, because just because they weren't that person today doesn't mean they won't be tomorrow. And if you treat them well, so if somebody comes in and maybe they wanted to opt into your webinar, but they didn't, they just wanted your freebie, awesome. So what are you doing to make sure that they're taken care of and happy about their freebie, so that even if they don't buy from you, they still refer people to you?
Got it. No, that's really great advice. Appreciate that. So Jim, you've trained a lot of salespeople over the years. You've spent a lot of time as a sales rep, and you've built very large teams of sales reps. Do you think that anybody can learn to be great at sales? And if so, what are some of the tips or strategies that have been helpful for you in terms of training people to learn this skill set?
Yeah, that's a great question, man. If I was as good as I am right now when I was doing my credit collections job 25 years ago, I'd have been a millionaire creating credit collections, because I would have done it differently. I wouldn't have been beating people up. I would have learned what I know and how to implement. So because I wasn't a great salesperson is why I didn't collect well. So it's an absolute learned skill. Everybody can learn it. And here's the proof in the pudding. Every single human being you've ever met is passionate about something and can sell the hell out of it. Now, that something might be their kids, right? How many people do you talk to who are like a bump on a log until you start talking about their kids? And all of a sudden they're like, oh yeah, she did great in her basketball game the other day, and she's the best in her class. And all of a sudden they're the quintessential salesperson, because they love what they're doing, they believe in it, and they understand the audience that they're talking to. right? So all you have to do is interchange the parts, teach them that what the product is, teach them who the audience is, and teach them how to connect the dots, right? So everybody is a good salesperson. It's not that they can be a good salesperson, it's they don't understand what they're selling.
Okay, got it. Now, you mentioned that you had been through a lot of trial and error. I mean, you weren't one of those guys, and I can definitely relate to this because I wasn't one of these guys either. But you didn't know like what you wanted to do as a career, as an entrepreneur, you know, from a young age. We both had to try many different things and work in many different industries to figure out kind of our sweet spot or where we felt like we belonged. So on that note, if you could, you know, circle back to and perhaps give yourself advice at that younger age or do something differently knowing what you know now, is there anything that you do differently or any advice that you'd want to give yourself in that circumstance?
Man, it's a great question. There's a lot of different versions of that people ask, and it always refines the process here. I spend so much time trying to take care of me instead of trying to take care of the people around me. Like literally everything I did in my life for the first 25 to 30 years was always geared around how was this going to benefit me. That was the first question I was always asking. And as a result, I got good at it. I could scheme up anything. I could make stuff work. But you had to work twice as hard, sometimes 10 times as hard, to get half the result. And once I got to a place where I realized that, you know what, everybody's not out to get me. Everyone's not here to hurt me. And that great things do happen when I show up for the benefit of the other person and I use my skills and my gifts 100% for the benefit of the person in front of me. Then the whole Zig Ziglar approach just comes to life. You know, help, the best way to get what you want is to help enough people get what they want. And I want to tell you this, I hear this all the time from people. Well, it's easy for you to say now, Jim, because, you know, you make a lot of money. Promise you it. I didn't start making a lot of money and keeping it until I started this approach.
Yeah. What you've got now is the result of this, of the process that you implemented.
Right.
On the note of adversity, and because I know you faced a lot of adversity growing up, and you know, you mentioned earlier that when you look back, you're able to connect some of those dots and see how it actually serves you today. What are some of the skill sets that you think that you picked up because of all the adversity you faced early on that actually help you as an entrepreneur today?
Well, one of the key ones for us, like one of our secret formula in our company, is the ability to assimilate to anybody else's environment, which is why we're a phenomenal outsource solution, because of my ability to be able to master any environment, you know, because of a survival skill that I learned that was powerful. My years in my time in collections was huge, because understanding the importance of helping people sit in their tension, right? We don't like it. And I hear people say this stuff all the time. You don't have to experience pain. Suffering is not important. Suffering is not essential. It can always be easy. I don't know a single successful person anywhere on the planet who didn't have to reach a point of suffer and struggle to get motivated enough to actually solve their problem. If all we needed was a great dream to get running, everybody be running, but they're not. We sit around until the fire gets so close that our ass is on fire and burning before we actually get moving. So you have to learn how to create that environment without actually having to put people in fire.
Okay.
And that's been powerful. That, and then the key, the last really super important part is the ability to tell the truth. I mixed so many webs of lies and deception, you know, all the way right up until my mortgage days. And I realized that just, you know, I made a lot of money. I didn't make a bunch of friends. I had no referral business. I had no repeat business. I didn't have people who trusted me. I had people who knew I was smart. And that has all changed. Our world has completely been turned around in the last, you know, 10 years. Because now the one thing that I get everywhere when I speak, and I speak on the stages a lot, is the number one piece of feedback I get from everybody is, man, I could feel your heart and I could feel how much you care. And that used to piss me off because I wanted them to say, you were amazing, you know, right. But they didn't. And now right. I wear that as a badge of honor.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
No, I definitely appreciate that. So I've just got a few more quicker questions, and then we'll work towards wrapping up. And this is really just to get an idea of how you operate as an entrepreneur, how you run things, because a lot of our listeners will be people who are building their business and especially wanting some freedom and some structure in their business, right? So they're not just stuck in that hustle and grind phase indefinitely. So if you could speak to, you know, how you've structured things, because you've got an impressive sized team, and the fact that they're all remote is a unique kind of challenge, right? So what are some of the systems or tools that you guys are using to manage this business and to communicate with all these people that work for you and just kind of keep on top of things?
We have so much. The first thing I would say is hiring team before you're ready is vital. I think most people wait until they have quote unquote profit before they hire a team. And we do the opposite. We hire a team before we can afford it. And then we just get crystal clear to how does that role directly tie to revenue? Does it free me up to go earn more revenue? Does their job directly lead to revenue, right? Because then you have less profit to begin with, but then you can reach more profit faster. And then you also, it's not rely at all on you. And so I suggest highly figure out who you need, hire them immediately, and then work towards generating profit behind that. The other thing to keep in mind at all times, and this is something I remember hearing Tony Robbins say years ago, is a good successful entrepreneur should always have their eyes on two different places. One eye on the business you're running today and one eye on the business you're becoming. And you always need to make decisions from there. So when you start seeing stuff, if you make decisions based on, well, I got six people on my team right now and I've got $12 in the bank, so here's what I should do. Well, if your goal is to become a team of 20 and 10x the business you have, you need to start making decisions based on the person who has 10x the size of your business.
Right. So you start doing the things that would get you to that place you want to be in versus somehow waiting until you get there before you change what you do. I think that's kind of like a backwards approach.
Totally.
That makes sense. That's great advice.
And then the great part of that is if you don't have a certain skill set or you can't figure it out, the thing you need to start immediately asking is, okay, if that's what I need to do because that's the result I want, who can help me get it? And then find somebody that you can lean on. Because people will help you. Everybody wants to help. I've been stunned at the amount of people who will help me do things if I just ask.
Yeah, that's a great point. Are there any specific habits or activities, things that are a part of your routine that you keep consistent and you feel contribute to your success as an entrepreneur?
Yes. Trusting team, trusting the people in front of you, and learning to not overreact. Just helping to see, take feedback for what it is, which is just information, mm-hmm. right? Feedback's not personal. It's not a judgment. It's not an indictment. And seek it everywhere. Every time you turn around, ask people how you're doing. That's both upline and downline. So it's to your clients. It's to, you know, anybody you're serving. It's to the people on your team. You know, be amazed at how many times you think you're doing great and your team will tell you you're not. So trust that feedback and look for it all the time.
Yeah, right on. Yeah, they say feedback is the breakfast of champions.
Amen.
Are there any specific people or resources that you've learned from along the way? Like these could be books you've read, courses you've taken, events you've been to, mentors, coaches, anything along those lines that's helped you learn to be an entrepreneur?
Wow. So much. I'm a fan of just about anything that Tony Robbins does. I went to my first Tony Robbins seminar when I was 19, and he wasn't much older than me. But back then, he wasn't Tony Robbins. He was just some big dude with a big head and a big mouth. but everything he said, I loved. And I've been following him for years. I will say, there's content everywhere. There's no shortage of content. I'm a big proponent of finding what people do as opposed to what they say. And so I really love biographies. I'm fascinated by how people got where they went. Bill Walsh, the former 49ers executive. I'm not a 49ers fan, but I've read that book a dozen times. you know, the score takes care of itself. And it was the story of how he became, how he and Joe Montana helped build the Niners dynasty when they did. And there were so many fascinating business correlations that you can make in that book. Great, great book. Another one is Zen Golf. And it's you don't have to know anything about golf. It's all about the power of the mind and visualization, and really understanding what you see hones out, really zeroes in the target and cuts out everything else. So the better you are at visualizing the result, especially in golf, using that metaphor, the golf cup is the smallest thing on the whole course. And when you can start focusing in on that, everything else moves itself from the frame. And then you start focusing on how do I get there? And it's the same thing in our business. It's the same thing in our life. Howard Schultz, I love Howard Schultz and his story. Simon Sinek is always a great one. There's so many, but I really love finding the stories of how people got what they got and why they believe what they believe.
Yeah, that's awesome. I've been trying to read at least one biography per month for pretty much the same reason as you. Those stories of what they did are absolute gold. And I'll make sure I link to everything you just mentioned in the show notes.
Awesome.
So my next question, two-part question. I'm curious how you define success, but if you could start by, taking us back to earlier in your journey as an entrepreneur, how do you think that you define success when you were first getting started? And if it has changed or evolved at all, what would it be today?
Man, it definitely changed. I haven't thought about that in a long time. Back when I started, it mostly mattered to me what people thought of me. So my success was defined by what image I could portray. So if people thought, oh, look at me, I make money, or I have a lot of clients or whatever. It doesn't matter how I got them. It doesn't matter how I got there. I could have stolen them. It doesn't matter. I had no moral code whatsoever. It was just get me the result and let me make sure that I can show people that that's the result I have, whether it was real or not. Whereas now I could care less what you think. It's not, I really don't. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. I do not give a crap what anybody thinks. I only care how I can help you. And most of the time, there's a disconnect there, right? I'm going to have to share something with you that you're not going to want to hear. And that's okay. I can do that because I don't care if you get mad at me.
Right.
Right. So now it's just about defining success for me is about how many people can I help? And how can I scale my impact in the world? Because there's a lot of things that we want to do and help a lot of people.
Okay, awesome. So I've just got one more question for you, and then we'll wrap up. Is there any action step that we could leave people with, especially if they're coming from perhaps a tumultuous background or some unfortunate circumstances? Like, what might help them turn things around and set them on that path of having a bit more control and a bit more fulfillment and freedom in their life as an entrepreneur?
Yeah, well, I'm a little biased in this because this is the lane I swim in, but learn how to master your environment. Get really, really clear at understanding that whenever you're in a room, it's because you were needed to be there, right? Every time you walk in a room, assume that everybody was waiting for you to come in and just look for immediately, how can I impact those people? If you're struggling and messed up, the worst thing you can do is focus on all the things that are killing you. The best way to pull from that is find something that can pull you out of it. And I have never found a better way to pull myself from a tailspin by helping, other than helping people. Go find people to walk into. And I have this crazy sense of delusion so that whenever I walk into a room, I do believe that it is now better because I'm in it. And, I'm not one of those people. Yeah. If you walk up at a party and people stop talking,
right?
Most people get paranoid. Oh, you're talking bad about me? It's like, I assume you stopped talking because you were talking about me. Because I want people talking about me. But I have that crazy, I'm deluded that way. But that's what I have to, that's what I've just convinced myself. I make such a positive impact on people that when I show up, they want to talk about me. And I don't care if that's right or not. That's what I believe.
Okay.
And it impacts my environment. So really focus on that for people. Just spend all of your time trying to figure out how to solve the problems for the people around you. And everything else will take care of itself.
That's awesome. Great advice. Well, Jim, this has been a pleasure, man. I really appreciate you taking the time to share your story and some of your insights with us. Now, if our audience wants to get in touch with you, learn more about what you're doing, check out some of the resources you've put together, anything like that, where is the best place that we can learn more about you and get in touch with you?
Yeah, if you can go, if you go to Gain the Edge Now, GAINTHEEDGE Now, it'll be in the show notes here. That's our website. We got a blog in there, and in that blog, it's like we share videos and content, and it's not just like sales tactics and strategies. It's what just happened on the campaign we were working on, something that happened good, something that happened bad. We try to give you as much insight as possible to help you shortcut the learning curve.
Okay, awesome. I appreciate that, and I'll make sure I link to that in the show notes. Well, Jim, thanks again, and I wish you all the best.
All right, thanks a lot, you guys. Go change some lives.
Thanks so much for listening to the Influence and Scale podcast. If you're enjoying the show, make sure you subscribe so you never miss an episode. And for show notes, links to resources mentioned, or to learn about how our agency can help you implement a profitable content marketing strategy, visit influenceandscale.com/podcast.